This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. I am your host, Dom Salvia. Jess BS is on the board and jazzed as hell to introduce to you our guest for the hour, Harvey K., fan favorite professor emeritus of democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, welcome back, man. Happy days.
2 weeks since I've talked to you.
It seems like a lifetime ago, man. A lot has happened, and you know, the older we get, the faster it goes, Harvey. So we'll get to some of the topics, but I wanted to start where most people are today, and no, not the fact that the actress that played Alice recently passed away as well. But Jimmy Carter, at age 100, passed away. You know, somewhat of a legacy, mixed legacy, but one thing I think most folks are reflecting on and responding to today, Harvey, is that he was a good man. What's your reaction to the passing of the former president, Harvey?
I think that's a very good way of understanding. He was a good man. The mixed legacy goes back to the fact that he really was a president who failed us. Basically failed us.
In what regard?
Well, let me make clear that he actually was a member of the infamous Trilateral Commission headed by David Rockefeller, paid for by David Rockefeller. By the way, so too was George H.W. Bush. And the Trilateral Commission was organized in Britain, well, Europe, the United States, and East Asia, especially Japan, with the idea that capitalism was under siege, that working people were and social movements had placed capitalism under siege, and it was time basically to reduce democracy, literally to reduce democracy, especially here in the United States. And Carter was a member of that group. They issued a report in 1975 titled The Crisis of Democracy, and his name is not one of the authors, but he, and along with the many other leading political and economic corporate figures, is behind it, so to speak. Mm. So when he became president, he did run a campaign that seemed to move to the left, to embrace the Democratic Party's FDR tradition. But once in the White House, he pursued a different kind of politics. He did not support labor law reform, which was an effort, first of all, to guarantee full employment, guarantee all Americans a job. And also, and this is important, the labor law reform part was to basically finally bring an end to the worst elements of the Taft-Hartley Act of 1947 that had empowered Southern states to create and turn themselves into right-to-work states and limited labor's capacity to organize in those states. So in that regard, I mean, he clearly was not a friend of working people. Also, he decided to place his interest in returning the Panama Canal to Panama above questions of environmental, the state of the environment. He turns back on environmentalism. He also turns back on Ralph Nader's consumer rights movement. And moreover, he pushed through the deregulation of transportation and business, the beginnings of the deregulation of transportation in this country, and also business and finance. So for those reasons, I actually do not respect him as president. This was not the kind of thing that I could respect historically. However, in contrast to the folks, I mean, you know, I can see the look on your face. He was a neoliberal. He was a champion of neoliberalism. Yeah. He brought Volcker in to head the Federal Reserve. Volcker, you know, basically set out to weaken the power of labor and really, really afford capital a greater economic control in America. That said, when Carter ran for re-election in 1980, and he had to confront first the opposition and the competition from Teddy Kennedy, he lost that year in good part because most Americans were fed up with him. And the sort of cherry on top, although cherries are pretty good at things, the final straw was when he sent a host of helicopters into Iran to try to free the hostages. I mean, Iran's a huge country, and he was sending this, this cohort of helicopters. It was a wild-eyed mission, I think, and they bogged down in the desert sands, as I recall. So if you think about it in those terms, that's not a record of a good and successful president at all. In fact, it was one who I actually think was one of our less desirable presidents. However, now this is the good thing. When he left office, and this is important, most presidents, when they leave office of late, you'll notice, the likes of Obama and Clinton and Bush and others, they set out to enhance their bank accounts by charging people vast sums of money to give speeches at banquets and on other occasions. Carter set out to make a difference with his life in the who knew the decades would be as many as they were, but he committed himself to Habitat for Humanity. And my wife was reading me something today. I think he had a hand basically in providing 14,000 homes. And wow. I mean, a real hand.
A direct hand building.
Like literally holding a hammer and doing the work.
Right. And seriously speaking, I mean, he passed up, a hell of a lot of money to make a humanitarian difference in the world. And for that reason, yes, definitely a good man, even if a not so good president.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That's Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. He's going to join me this entire hour. Harvey, I certainly appreciate your perspective. And I know I do the old jokes occasionally, but, I mean, were you a voting age back then? And what was your thought at the time? I know where you're at now. Like, where were you? What was going through your head in 76 and 80?
Okay, well, so I'm now going to make a public confession.
Okay, man.
I did not vote Republican.
You did not vote Republican.
But I was living in Louisiana, finishing my PhD at Louisiana State University in 1976. And in many ways, my vote, it seemed, would not really matter. It wouldn't count.
Right.
Because the state, it was a one-party state in many ways. But the other thing was, I did not think Jimmy Carter deserved my vote. I didn't have the trust and confidence in him that many other Democrats had in 76. But sure as hell, I wasn't going to vote for Republican. Then in 1980, having proven my fears correct, I decided, and I've never done it since, to vote third party. I voted for Barry Commoner, who was the candidate of the Citizens Party, as I recall. And Barry Commoner was a World War II veteran who then was a leading campaigner for nuclear disarmament in the 1960s. I believe he had a PhD. He was a doc, in some kind of engineering or sciences. So I felt good about the vote at the time, but it basically threw away my vote.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I threw away my vote and decided I would never throw it away again. Better to hold my nose and vote for the least evil of the candidates than do that kind of thing. And I have no regrets necessarily.
Let me ask you this, Harvey. In doing some of the reading after Carter's passing here, and being a kid, born in 71, so I very distinctly remember the end of the 70s and the Iran hostage crisis, and we were talking about it earlier. I mean, until I found out the truth of the Republicans and efforts to basically kneecap Carter in delaying the return of the Iran hostages, right? That would have given him certainly a bump, and they would have got them home to their families quicker by folks within the orbit of Reagan and the Republican Party. I did not know how much of an impact the relationship his rivalry with Kennedy impacted. What was your take on Kennedy during that race? If Kennedy would have come out on top, would you have perhaps stuck Democratic Party then?
I definitely would have voted for Kennedy. I mean, whatever my reservations about his, I was in college at the time of the Chappaquiddick affair, and I knew people who knew the young woman who died in the car that he was driving that night. But that said, he at least represented, he was rooted, that's a good way of putting it, in that sort of long sort of FDR and the 60s kind of Democratic Party that I at least appreciated. So I would have voted for him. And I was hoping he was going to take out Carter, but you know what I mean. Remove Carter from the incumbency. But I obviously can assure you that what happened in 80, this should be noted, that most Americans this was working people, just stayed home. The turnout for Carter is what cost him. It isn't that everyone turned out to vote for Reagan, however much it might have seemed that way. It was that the turnout for Carter went down dramatically. Mm. I read somewhere in a reliable historical source, it was like 10 million voters just stayed home rather than, because they couldn't bring themselves to vote for Reagan, but they just wouldn't vote for Carter after those several years. I mean, let me remind everyone, the 1970s was a time of serious economic crisis in the United States. It became known as a period of stagflation, in which the economy was stagnant, and yet inflation was running high, and unemployment was also running high. So it was, a nightmarish mix.
Yeah.
And he decided, as I said, to take the course of neoliberalism rather than do what would have been Democratic Party leadership efforts in the past, and that is use government to make a difference.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Harvey K. joining me, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Just 90 seconds left in this segment. Do you think if Kennedy would have, come out on top on that primary, that he would have been elected? And what do you think, Kennedy could have beaten Reagan?
He would have run into the question that I asked myself about Kennedy.
Yeah.
But I do think he would have. I mean, I really do. Because for a start, he would have been seen perhaps as the working man or working person's candidate. This is also interesting. I looked at polling that was done during the late 70s into 1980. And it turns out that it was the generation that had fought World War II, which was, by the way, still very much alive. If you imagine young men in 1945 being 25.
Right.
And this is really only, 25 years later? Am I math off? Anyhow.
30 years 80, later, yeah.
30 years later, whatever it is. They're middle-aged or entering seniority. They're not that old. Those men and women, they did vote for the Democratic candidate in 1980. It was younger folks, by the way, who turned out for Reagan, which is something to consider, okay?
Kids these days. Harvey K., come back with us. He is the Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. We're going to shift our conversation into the Civil War at the MAGA, the Republicans. They're eating each other alive. Let's talk about that, plus more of your calls, 855-752-4842.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, joining me. You can do so as well, 855-75-CIVIC. Harvey, before we move on to these other topics, I just want to throw this one out there. The Atlantic, of course, everyone's writing up about Jimmy Carter, and I thought this was a nice one. He did a speech on July 15th of 1979, and he... This is the malaise speech. He kind of, ripped up his original speech and talked about,
Wait, 79 or 78?
This was 1979.
Oh, I thought the speech was in 78. Okay, but go ahead.
Well, it's the Atlantic, man. I'm not going to quote their sources, but that's what they're saying. I thought that the conclusion of this, so this is something that was, from the heart, I think, and that's why apparently, according to the reporting after the speech, he had an 11-point bump on his favorable ratings. But he concluded as such, quote, In a nation that was proud of hard work, strong families, close-knit communities, and our faith in God, too many of us now tend to worship self-indulgence and consumption. Human identity is no longer defined by what one does, but by what one owns. But we've discovered that owning things and consuming things does not satisfy our longing for meaning. We've learned that piling up material goods cannot fill the emptiness of lives which have no confidence or purpose. Wow. And I think that it struck me because I'm thinking, like, right now, you look at what who's going to be in the White House. It's like, that is exactly
Mr. Consumer.
Right. That's exactly what we're dealing with.
You know what? I'm glad you're moved by that. That's the kind of rhetoric of Jimmy Carter that makes me angry. Makes me angry.
And why is that?
Because that was the speech that's one of the speeches in which he's basically telling Americans, it's all your fault. When people are going through economic difficulties, you don't tell them it's their fault. By the way, that sounded reminiscent of more recent events. I'm quite serious.
Yeah.
That malaise speech, by the way, he never used the word malaise.
He never did. That's correct. Yep.
Interesting.
Yep.
That was one of the speeches that really, really drove me to want somebody to run against him in the primary. Because what we needed was leadership. And he actually said, when he was running for office, I think might have been even his inaugural, I can't remember where, back in 77, he spoke of FDR and LBJ and that, you know, the challenges and leadership and all of that. And what he did in that speech and others is he basically told Americans they should be wary of their neighbors.
Mm.
That they can trust each other. By the way, Dom, if you have a copy of my book, The Fight for the Four Freedoms, I lay all of this out in my book, the disappointment that so many people felt when they, on reflection, for that kind of rhetoric. He basically called on Americans to liberate businesses and that they should, you know, basically accept the status quo and talk nicely about America. It was that kind of stuff.
Well, and maybe, that's a great point, Harvey. And, you know, when we talk about these quotes and it's hard to be in the moment, you know, to put it in perspective and put it in the context of which it was said. I totally get that. You know, when things are south and you're telling the American people, hey, it's your fault, do better, that's not going to resonate very well. But I don't know that the message, although maybe untimely, is inaccurate. You know what I'm saying? Especially given what we see going on right now.
He was a committed Baptist. Maybe he should have spoken every Sunday in this church and not preach to the American people about things that might well be beyond their control.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Harvey K, sticking around with us. You as well. 855-752-4842. Let's move along to some of the other issues, Harvey. H-1B visas, Elon Musk, Laura Loomer. I mean, I've learned more. I've heard more about from these folks in the last week than I've ever wanted to for my entire life. From 30,000 feet, Harvey, how do you think the Chaos Caucus is handling their victory so far?
Okay. Well, first of all, when I hear H-1, what is it?
H-1B.
It makes me think that that's the next pandemic.
Yeah.
Me too.
I know.
Jess and I, we think alike, Jess.
Everybody just goes, oh, God, what strain of that? Right. Oh, no.
H-1B 2024.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And given the new administration, they're not going to even provide us with a vaccine to head off this H-1B1 virus. That's one to consider.
The shelves are empty, Harvey. The shelves are empty.
But don't worry. We'll still send things to Russia.
You're right.
Or China. By the way, just as a sidebar, I was said to Jess in the break, you did hear the news about China and how they hacked into the Treasury Department.
Yes, U.S. Treasury says its computers were hacked by a Chinese threat actor in a, quote, major incident. Ooh, a major incident.
Ooh, boy.
That can't be great.
Tomorrow we will discover that all this talk of a deficit is nothing compared to the fact they've wiped out the Treasury.
Right. Well, they own a bunch of that debt, so they wipe out their own debt that they're bonds that they have purchased.
I guess in that sense, we're safe.
Right. So we got 2 minutes left in the segment, and we'll get some callers as well. 855-75-CIVIC. Harvey, what's your impression been these last few days?
Well, actually, my head has been spinning over this stuff because, look, under no circumstances do I ever want to be said to have said something nice about Laura Loomer. Let me start with that.
Fair enough.
But one thing that's come out in all this, and I are people not paying attention, is that the Trump-Musk duet is a duet which is anti-American. Okay? What are they doing? They have little trust. By the way, another case, little trust in their fellow citizens. They haven't talked about providing the kinds of educational resources that would enable Americans to fulfill these jobs. Not to mention, Trump has always filled jobs with people who he's brought in, okay?
Yep.
Okay. But this whole thing is outrageous, utterly outrageous. And to think that Laura Loomer is speaking a perverse form of the truth is really, I mean, it's really something.
If Laura Loomer and Steve Bannon are the voice of reason in the MAGA party,
we're all screwed.
We really need to do some self-evaluation.
Yes, we are already screwed. It's just a matter of whether we can get off the ground.
So whether or not we get kissed first. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin at Green Bay, coming back on the other side with more of your calls, 855-752-4842.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvi Show, 855-752-4842. Super jazzed. Harvey K. sticking around for the rest of the hour. He's a professor emeritus of democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, and our favorite Delano Democrat. I'm going to keep on saying it, Harvey, until someone makes a website. Discussing.
Wait, before we get going. I just want to give a shout out to someone.
Yeah.
A listener of your show who's in West Virginian. Okay. His name is Troy Miller. He's a leading Democrat in the state of West Virginia, one of the progressives. He's actually led the charge in many ways to transform the West Virginia Democratic Party into a truly post-Manchin Democratic Party.
Oh, nice.
And also he is leading the charge in that state that party should pursue the creation of an economic bill of rights.
Hey, that's what I'm talking about.
Together.
Yes.
So a shout out to Troy Miller, great West Virginian.
All right, Troy Miller getting the love. You can get some love here as well, 855-752-4842. We're going to talk about this Musk-Loomer situation and this H-1B and visas and so forth. Now, Harvey, apparently they do like 65,000 of these a year. There's another maybe 20,000 or so for folks that are graduating from universities here in the States that they can stay. I mean, I don't think that we're talking about real, real big numbers, but my takeaway on this was we have a situation where we have migrant workers who are getting paid less than American workers, and you know, to the benefit and the bottom line, the profit of these big corporations and billionaires. Now, if I look at like what's going on here in the state of Wisconsin and the dairy industry and agriculture, talk about, you know, these 11 million or 20 million people, whatever your number is, that they're going to, you know, set up camps, the megas are going to start deporting. Well, what's the situation there? Now, perhaps they're using inaccurate, fraudulent I-9 forms. So they're getting taxes taken out. You know, they're legal, quote unquote, because, you know, the farm owners aren't going to go dig deep. And they've done their part. That's all they need to do. They've done their due diligence by getting assigned I-9, right? And a valid, quote unquote, social number. And that's the end of their due diligence. But at the end of the day, it seems very similar to me. You got folks that are working here under, you know, oppressing circumstances. I mean, the H-1B visas, you know, Musk or Tesla or SpaceX, they hold that over your head, right? And if you work for them, indentured servitude is, I think, what Steve Bannon in some of these articles are referring to. Well, in a very similar situation, I think, on a different scale, the migrant farm workers and the agriculture workers and the slaughterhouse workers, same kind of situation. If anything goes south down there, the employers, presumably knowing that these folks probably aren't, you know, quote unquote legal or have legal, you know, immigration status, can hold things over their workers' heads. So while we're at different pay scales, you know, a high tech worker coming in from India working for Musk at a reduced rate, or, you know, a laborer farmhand coming and working for, you know, the farm up the street, same situation still applies though, Harvey.
What you've said reminds me of a conversation I had with a number of people recently, and that is that the South Asian, the Indian South Asians who are working in Silicon Valley, when I say Silicon Valley, I assume everyone knows what I'm referring to.
Right, right.
There's a real problem, apparently, that does affect their lives as well, and that is the caste system has found its way into Silicon Valley so that, you know, And by the way, Newsom, governor of California, vetoed the bill that would have made the presence of that caste system outlawed it. So there's a lot of corruption in all of this, one might say, as this unfolds. To me, the problem is that you've got this. Well, not problem. First of all, it's wonderful that the MAGA, what are they called, the billionaires and the right-wing billionaires and the MAGA folks are loggerheads. I hope this isn't just a show. You know,
right.
I worry about this. We're talking about a politics today, which is all show, and Laura Loomer's part of that show. But it would be wonderful to think that this is the first of many battles to take place among who knows how many competing interests there are in that coalition, right?
Yeah.
But I understand what you're saying. Another difference, however, is this: the farm workers you're talking about, they're quite often going to be from Central America and Mexico, okay. Whereas the high tech workers that these guys are looking to import on the H1B1 virus, sorry,
visa, yeah.
Those are from East and South Asia.
Yeah.
It really is a different kind of thing in the fact that as to how those folks will be treated on a daily basis and whether or not you would actually find them being rounded up and deported. Okay. I mean, it's that different. So I hadn't really thought about it in the terms you mentioned. I will think about it in the future, but it does strike me that we are talking about two different, in quotes, classes and ethnicities of people.
Well, and absolutely right. You know, anyone coming over on H-1B, there's quote unquote legal and informed immigration status. No question about it. I think the overriding issue, it remains the same: the suppression of American wages by the use of these foreign workers. At the end of the day, similar strain between these two different groups situations.
The long-standing argument on that is that, well, quite often these low-wage jobs Americans wouldn't fill. But the thing is, if they didn't have access to cheap labor, these corporations, they would be compelled in many, many, many cases to raise the wages, which might make them more appealing.
And the same thing, again, with the H-1B, right? If you're bringing these folks in, you're paying them less than you were American workers. Because, as mentioned in one of the articles I read before you came on, Harvey, apparently, Tesla laid off a bunch of American workers and backfilled some of those workers with H-1B visa applicants. You know, that's how they roll.
Right. I mean, look, I mean, it's worth noting that there was some discussion as to whether or not Musk was actually in this country.
Legally himself. Or not. Yeah,
okay. Yeah. Okay. And then, of course, the way in which our once again first lady to be found her way into this country.
Oh, the Einstein visa. Come on, man. I mean, those are even more rare than the H-1B visas. I'm not sure what her Einstein capabilities were, but she got apparently some letters of recommendation that were very persuasive. It's amazing how the rich guy's girlfriends, you know, get the visas.
Yeah, it is. One thing that constantly occurs to me with all of this is, we, you know, you talked a while ago, you brought up the speech Jimmy Carter gave.
Yep.
And, you know, the fact is that, again, you referred to the state of America today. Well, our elites, political and economic elites, and their pursuit of their own benefits, we all know what's going on. And as a consequence, it inevitably leads people to some kind of sense that, well, I guess corruption's okay, I guess cheating's okay, I guess if I put my own interests first, it's okay. I mean, once upon a time, for, you know, whether they were phonies about it or not, elites had a responsibility to, in quotes, set examples. I'm not defending elites.
Okay?
But the understanding of the media was you didn't expose all the corruption, or if you did, you made sure to, you know, to push people out, not necessarily to leave them in place. So
I don't know, man. I think it's always been there. It's always going to be there. You know,
shining
the light on it and having the different, you know, it's a different world,
wait,
different media world now. No, I hear what you're saying. Go ahead.
You have a man who's just been reelected president who has dozens of felony convictions.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, who lies repeatedly. I mean, his whole career has been a mess of lies and dealings that. And now he's rewarded with the presidency of the United States.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's our kind of guy. Don't forget the insurrection. 855-752-4842.
Wait a minute. Yeah, I didn't even mention the insurrection.
Yeah, I know, man. You know, that little thing, you know, trying
so
to
easy to forget
deny my
everything.
Vote. And that's the one I remember the most because that's my vote he's taken away.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, we will be together on January 6th this year, you and I.
Oh, most excellent. Look forward to it.
Yeah.
Let's get some callers in. Cam from Appleton, one of my old stomping grounds. Hey, Cam, welcome back. What do you got for us?
You've made that like an inside joke between my partner and I. We go, where's that place? And we just say our old stomping grounds. And she just rolls her eyes or I roll mine. But I wanted to bring up, I brought it up when Earl was subbing for Maggie today, and I think it was lost in translation there with him.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that it comes across a little bit better with you guys. But Carter said in 2019 during a retreat in Virginia that he believed that Trump cheated and that the Russians aided him in getting the election and for 2016. And that's the only reason why he was the president. And in 2020, the House election security report released, and even though it's redacted, it essentially says that it was cheated again, but this the Russian plan was that if he didn't win, that they would try to instill doubt in the election system. I'm urging you guys again to go, like everyone that's listening, to go look at counties like Maricopa County and Arizona and review this stuff. Jimmy Carter is he had a lot of smart things about him. I agree with your guest that there were some things that weren't too great, but he knew that Trump cheated. We can't keep pretending like it's not a thing. We can't. We have actual evidence now. We need to.
When you say, but hang on, Cam. When you say we have the evidence, what evidence? What can you articulate? What the evidence is in Maricopa County, for example?
Yeah. Sure. So there's this thing called drop-off votes. So if you go and look at the actual voting data, which is available almost everywhere for each county and each state at this point, because that took a little while to get, right? If you look at it, it shows statistical impossibilities. Like I'm talking 1 in quadrillion, like 14 quadrillion chances of it working out the way that it did in just one place, where it's happened in every place for swing states. And in the drop-off votes, you look at them and you see that Trump did statistically way higher or way better than he would get more votes than the governor or Senate person that was on the ballot.
Sure.
And Kamala got far less than the governor or Senate on the ballot for the left. And that only happened in the swing states. It didn't happen in any of the neighboring states. It's never happened in the history of our country, period, not even when Reagan won 49 of the 50 states. It's never happened to this level. There, it's not even like a cubic curve or anything like that. It's not possible.
So if that's the case, then no Cam, and we've got a couple of minutes, and we'll let Harvey perhaps jump on this on the other side. Then who would have standing to bring lawsuits or investigations? I mean, certainly the Democrats in those areas in Maricopa County and other areas. I mean, if this is well-known knowledge, then where are the lawsuits?
Yep, that's a good question too. So right now, what's being attempted to be done by SmartElections.us is a good resource for this. SmartElections.us is trying to get the hand recounts done. And the problem is that states will come back and say that we already performed our audit. We don't need to. But the audits they vary per state. Some of the state's audits only count up to 200 votes out of the entire state.
Right, they do a sampling. They may use the same machines or different machines. Thanks for the call, Cam. Harvey, we got like about a minute left in the segment. What are your thoughts on those statistical anomalies that folks like Cam are bringing up?
Well, I can't speak to statistical anomalies that I don't have in front of me.
Access to, sure. Yeah.
But I do want to say that one thing to keep in mind is that It's not that unusual for the presidential candidate to not get the kinds of votes one might expect, given that others further down the ballot have gotten higher. In other words, you can get Democrats elected down ballot and people just not voting, you know, at the presidential level for them. And I think this time around, it's all the more likely to have to be the case. And I don't know if that's what he's referring to. I mean, there were quite a few people in various parts of the United States who did not want to vote. If Biden had run, it would have been the same or for her, because they saw the question of Israel and the Palestinians in their minds or similar kinds of questions. But I'm not voting for this person, but I want my senator to be a Democrat, or I want my congressperson to be a Democrat.
So, folks, this is the Dom Salvia Show. Come back one last segment with Harvey K.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Hello, tomorrow. And goodbye to yesterday. We've been waiting for this moment, and we still don't. Or know the reason why we both decided we should say goodbye.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4841. Last segment, our guest today, Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy, University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, just goes too quick, man.
Yep, and you know what? I want to give a shout-out to your producer, Jess, okay? And the shout-out is, well, question first. Who's choosing your intro and outro music?
It's a team effort. Oh, I picked all of them out for today.
I'm giving you both a shout out. I love your music.
Oh, thanks, Harvey. Appreciate that. Yeah, we love the music too. We do actually put more effort in here, as much effort into the music as we do the show. Oh, man, 855-752-4842. We got Harvey, we got a few callers on hold, so let's get to them. I saw Bruce on the YouTube. Go Lions. Yeah, go Lions today. I can't believe Minnesota yesterday. Anyway, Tom from Madtown, you are up. Welcome, sir. What do you got for us?
Hey, guys. Soon to be Happy New Year.
Yeah, to you as well.
I have to say the death of Jimmy Carter, and I know his presidency was nowhere near perfect. I understand all of that stuff, but you know, I'm as the resident romantic poet of of this station, I would like to say I just want at least the appearance of Jimmy Stewart in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, or the fact that, you know, JFK. I remember you know, those people and Americans who aren't old enough to remember Jimmy Carter or JFK or any of those things, people that were born, let's say, in the last 20 years, don't have the same kind of folklore that we grew up with. And I think it's one of the things we've really lost. You know, you've got a professor emeritus of democracy there, and maybe someday we'll have to give classes in what democracy used to be. So I would love to see, you know, a return to some kind of character. And Jimmy Carter, death of Jimmy Carter, really hit me today, especially on, you know, on the different shows today, because I hope it's something we haven't lost.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Appreciate it. Happy New Year to you as well. He makes a good point, Harvey. But I look at this as, is this something new and lost, or was it never really there? You know, because it's hard, you know, in the course of human history, it's hard to think like, this hasn't been done already. And I think this is, it's to me, it's always there. It's always a challenge to find, quote unquote, folks of good character to, you know, go for these jobs. I mean, who wants the crappy job? Look what happens if you go and run for office, man, right? You get a microscope, you know, up your ass, and everyone's talking trash, you know, and you're probably not going to win because most people don't win, especially on their first run. You got to give up whatever you're doing. I mean, and then once you get in, you got to deal with all the actual governance, let alone constituent services and so on and so forth. And Harvey, seems like a lot of folks just rather, you know, I'm going to go work. I'll donate to a candidate, but I'm going to do my thing and not get involved.
You know, I think of myself as a very romantic notion of politics and history, not naive, however.
Yeah.
And let me just say that because I'm a historian and I've spent all these years looking closely at these characters,
right.
Okay? You don't get me started about John Kennedy either.
Yeah,
okay?
Right.
Just don't get me started. You know, one way of putting it is, yeah, Bill Clinton wanted to be John Kennedy. The difference is he got caught.
Yeah. and now no one gives a damn. You know what I'm saying? It's like, at least,
well,
and maybe they will again, but you cannot tell me that the MAGAs give one damn iota about what Donald Trump does.
Right. Well, one thing people should appreciate is apparently the highest divorce rate by religious faith in this country was like Christian evangelicals in the South. Okay, something like that.
Right. And highest pregnancy rates and all sorts of different and terrible education outcomes, uh-huh, and so on and so forth. 855-752-4842. L.A. Tom, you are up. We're on with Harvey. Welcome, Tom. Happy New Year. What do you got?
Hey, Happy New Year, guys. Harvey, first, I should know I'm a proud Franklin Delano Roosevelt Democrat. And what I'm trying to figure out is this. Jimmy Carter was not in it for, let's say, the money or the wealth. And at that point, we didn't have Buckley versus Vallejo, Citizens United, First National Bank versus Blatty to put the money into politics the way we did. Why do you think it is that he wasn't as bold as an FDR? And why wasn't it that after FDR left, the Democrats did not continue to be standing on those bold shoulders? If there really was no, I don't know if there's a kickback or what, but where there really wasn't the kickback like there is today.
Oh, well, let me make something clear. My reading has shown me that the Carter family, that is his parents, the family that into which he grew up, were not pro FDR Democrats, first of all. So that's first. Secondly, the FDR, the decision on the FDR monument, as I recall, may well have been taken during the Carter administration, but Carter was insistent that no public dollars be used to make it happen, unless I've got my monuments mixed up, okay? No, Carter had no real affection and no upbringing that would have had much affection for FDR. He, you know, so in a speech, yeah, he was capable of talking about FDR and LBJ and their leadership, regarding especially domestic affairs in the case of Johnson, and especially, well, in both foreign and domestic for FDR. But he just didn't have it in him. He didn't have it in him to be that kind of leader. He, in some ways, there's a word, you know, he fired his own cabinet. I mean, don't forget, he fired his own cabinet. I mean, what? That's not leadership. That's like a kid who says, you can't play with my toys or something.
Harvey K., love playing with you. Thank you so much. We'll talk again next week, January 6th. Have a wonderful New Year's. Thank you, Jess P.S. Thank you to our fair audience. Stick around. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba coming up next.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Thanks, Harvey.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.